podcast with myself, Tommy Wood, and Chloe Archard. Quickly, we'll just apologise for our recent radio silence. I'm afraid I've had a lot to do in my day job, which hasn't left me much time for recording podcasts. But we're back, and we've got a great, great guest today. We are being joined by Daryl Edwards. Hi, Daryl.
Hi, Tommy. Thanks so much for inviting me, guys. Hi, Chloe.
Hi.
Hey, guys. Right, so a quick introduction for anybody who doesn't know who Daryl is, where have you been? He is otherwise known as the Fitness Explorer. He is the mastermind behind Health Unplugged, which was the UK's first paleo and ancestral health conference in October last year. He is the author of two books, Paleo Fitness, and a new one that's just come out called Paleo from A to Z. And he does all of his work around the traditional sort of paleo guidelines and his approach to fitness, which is something called what he calls primal play and sort of more natural movement. And any of you who are sort of hardcore athletes out there and think that primal play isn't really going to get you in any good shape. Earlier this year, I was doing primal play with Daryl, and you know, he's a strong guy, so he definitely pushed me around. So whatever he's doing, it works.
Thank you.
So thanks for joining us today, Daryl. It's a real pleasure to have you.
No, thanks again for the invitation. It's
No, I was going to actually start just by saying, because I know that you're involved now in so many different things, but one of the things that you started with, as Tommy's just mentioned, is the primal play methodology. And I just wondered if you could explain a bit more for people about your fitness philosophy.
Okay, so primal play, it really came about. My kind of backstory is of a guy who was, I was kind of like Clark Kent, but without his strength. So I was the kind of very weak, felt physically inadequate in many respects. And as I matured, as I became an adult, I expected that things would change. I would become as strong as my father was when I was a kid. And it didn't really happen. And part of the transition to the paleo lifestyle, as well as looking at the diet, was also natural movement, evolutionary fitness, and thinking about movements we were designed to do. And I kind of dived in. One aspect of that was kind of diving into kind of CrossFit, which had this philosophy about being adept at every single physical and potential fitness domain available. And I was like, I want to do this. I want to become an athlete. I want to indulge in the sport of fitness. And I tried that for a while, and I got a lot stronger and a lot fitter and a lot faster in a relatively short space of time. But the downside was I didn't enjoy a lot of that. So I enjoyed the results. I enjoyed putting my name on the board and beating some of my peers occasionally. But there were many occasions where I really hated being within that environment and the kind of stress and the pressure that I was in. And I remember feeling that I was taking my former career, which is working in banking, investment banking, I took that environment into the gym environment. So I had a really stressful job, and then I wanted a really stressful gym environment because that was the only way to get the results. So posing the question about how was I going to continue to do this to move well for the remainder of my days, I thought about what I did as a kid, just moving around naturally, having fun, having no real agenda, being in the moment and having inherent enjoyment of movement, and primal play was born. So that's what primal play really was about, the essence of enjoying intrinsically movement and finding out what your body can do and exploring what it's capable of without the hang-ups that come from movement or fitness, conventional fitness, which is, I don't look like that guy, I'm not as big as that guy, I'm not as strong as that guy, I'm not as, you know what I mean, I haven't got 10-pack abs, I can't do a 2-minute Fran, you know, I can't achieve these measurements and objectives, so I'm just going to kind of either be a spectator or beat myself into the ground. I was like, I don't care about that anymore, I just care about enjoying what I do, but still getting stronger, fitter, faster, etc., whilst doing it.
Mm-hmm. You do quite a lot of group classes around London, don't you?
Yes, I think one of the interesting aspects is again, thinking about, you know, human relationships and group dynamics, and in a lot of conventional fitness exercises or you know, classes, it's very much the individual that is paramount. It's the individual that has to achieve the objective. And if you are in a group setting, it's still very much about, you know, a sequence of 10 individuals performing an activity, and let's see who's the first, or let's see how, if we can all get through to the end of the session. And there's very little interaction between those taking part, apart from maybe a pat at the back on the back for doing well. So Primal Play was born out of getting people to move, to interact, and to assist each other in terms of partner-based resistance. So, you know, you utilize your strengths and your weaknesses together. So somebody who's really strong, so Tommy and I were playing, you know, certain drills last year, and, you know, we're kind of working off each other's strengths and weaknesses so that we're both getting a really intense play out. So, you know, if Tommy's stronger than I in a particular movement pattern and I'm weaker in a particular movement pattern, that kind of imbalance, we can equalize that to both achieve something, you know, pretty incredible. And I've now wholeheartedly endorsed Primal Play, as I would, but it's the only movement methodology I follow, and I'm stronger and fitter than I've ever been before. So just through playing and just through kind of exploration and visualization and thinking about what I can do, you know, not just for myself, but with others.
There's some amazing pictures of Daryl on his website jumping over huge bins and all sorts of things. So, so if people want to join in your classes, how can they? Is it something that people can just turn up to, or?
Yeah, I run classes locally. I'm based in Chiswick in London, in West London. So people can just contact me via my website, and I host classes whenever I'm in London. So. People just get in touch, and then I'll let them know when I'm hosting sessions. And occasionally I will run longer duration seminars, 1 day, 2 day seminars. And I'm in the process of running, kind of launching a certification for Primal Play and Paleo Fitness in the future. So that would be for, you know, training the trainer, or for those who want to immerse themselves even more into the process of Primal Play. So yeah, just get in touch, and if you're ever in, you know, my locality, I would love for you to join me in some Primal Play.
Tell us about your new book. I think it's called Paleo A to Z, and where the idea from it came from.
Yeah, so Paleo from A to Z, it was released earlier this week, or early last week actually, and it came about by just the amount of questions that I've been asked over many years now since I've been following the paleo lifestyle. I've been doing paleo in quotation marks for over a decade now. It's probably about 11 years now. And when I first encountered this, there was kind of one or two books. There wasn't very much on the internet about this. I was speaking to people like Rob Wolf, talking about some of these concepts. And I found when I was trying to explain it to others, I felt I either had to, they had to have the equivalent level of intelligence or nutritional qualifications or microbiologist knowledge in order for me to communicate the concepts with them. Mm-hmm. And I remember people saying to me, you know, this is all well and good, but it just seems, it's just so complicated. You know, I have to be a chef, and I have to have a PhD in biochemistry, and I have to have, you know, I have to be an exercise scientist in order to have this fulfilling lifestyle. And it's like, actually, no, you don't. It's really very simple. But there's nothing out there that kind of portrayed this simplicity around this lifestyle. So it started off, the project started off by me thinking of just a couple of pages of topics that people talk about in paleo, but in bite-sized terms that almost anyone could understand very easily. And then it's kind of grown out of that initial concept to think about, there are a lot more questions that people want answers to, and hopefully it can be a one-stop shop, but still give people the opportunity, they want to delve in deeper, they want to, you know, delve into the research that they can. But for some people, they just want to click a few pages, dip in, I'm interested in, you know, how to optimize my sleep. Okay, here's some very simple instructions, 1 to 5, this is what you can do, job done. So I think that's, apart from Primal Play, my second most passionate project is to simplify the paleo lifestyle and to introduce people to this, that it's not, you know, it's not part of their, you know, it's not within their scope. You know, a lot of people are put off by the term paleo, are put off by the fact that you have to endlessly research in order to make a decision about what you want to do. Whereas when I started this journey, it was just so simple. You know, eat these foods, move, you know, obey the sunshine, get some vitamin D, get some sunlight, you know, kind of reduce your stress, boom, 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 do all that sort of stuff, and then everything will be great. And now it's become, what's new this week that I need to adopt and to follow in order to optimize my health? You know, what's going to be fashionable in 6 months' time that people are talking about? So, long-winded way of saying simplifying the message to get as many people on board as possible in an alphabetical format to make it nice and easy for them to digest.
I do think that's really important, actually, because I read a lot about nutrition and various different things, but I know what you mean about it gets ever more complicated, and the more you read, the more complicated everything seems to become, and you can almost drive yourself crazy thinking there's so much conflicting advice out there, and actually just bringing it back to those simple kind of core things that will improve people's health, and just making it really simple, like you say, I think is important, because there's a lot of people that don't want to go into all the biochemical detail, and they just want to know the simple things they can do that actually will make their health better.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, and I say this with the utmost respect, but you know, we're not all as clever as and intelligent as Tommy. Mm. And I found there was a point for myself where I was doing so much research to optimize my health and well-being, that it actually became detrimental, because there was a lot of inaction. It was like, I'm not really sure what to do today, because, as you say, ambiguous advice. Next week I'm bound to read something else that's going to conflict with what I'm doing now. Yeah. So you get this kind of, analysis paralysis, rather than thinking, hold on a second, there's a lot here that I can count on, that I can work with, that is going to be beneficial for me. So maybe I should focus on that. And then whatever takes my fancy, whatever I'm interested in, I can spend some time doing some research. But I do get concerned when I see a lot of people coming to me or asking the questions about why they're encountering continuing health issues, even though they've adopted this lifestyle. And usually, you know, the amount of time they're spending, you know, looking at blogs and, you know, listening to podcasts, I'm like, well, I can kind of see why, because probably if you just spent a little bit of time cooking your own food and, do you know what I mean? And going to bed at 10 o'clock at night rather than staying up until midnight reading that blog, you know, then maybe that's the direction you want to go into rather than amassing more knowledge. So if it was simple, it was fairly straightforward for our ancestors to live this lifestyle because it was based around survival. Mm-hmm. So, you know, There has to be something in that message. The essence of that message is this should be simple. It should be instinctive. It should be something that we're drawn to because it kind of makes sense. And if there's validation from science, fantastic. But, you know, it is about going back to basics as well.
Okay, so what do you think about the paleo scene here in the UK? How does it compare to what you see in America? Because I know you're over there a lot. And how have you seen it grow and evolve over the last few years?
There's something quite strange about the UK, because I do know we have a significant paleo following here. You know, you look at the membership of paleo groups and forums and you know, people, you know, the podcasts that are hitting number one in the UK kind of health and fitness charts that are based around this lifestyle. But there is also not very much a community spirit around paleo. So the biggest difference between here and America and also Australia is the sense of community and people wanting everyone to drive the movement forward. And I'm not sure, I'm still kind of scratching my head as to what the reasons are for that. But that's what I'd say would be the key difference. You know, I go to the US and almost every 6 months, every year, it just seems to be growing in leaps and bounds. And when I went to Australia, I went to Australia in about 2011, and no one had heard of paleo. I was like trying, really trying to push what I was doing out there, and it pretty much fell flat. It's like, oh, what's this paleo stuff? No, we don't need that here. We've got, you know what I mean? Everything's fine. We've got great food anyway. We don't need that paleo stuff. And literally a couple of years later, you know, there's paleo vendors all everywhere. There's like there's huge business, you know, lots of businesses driven up from this kind of the grass, paleo grassroots. They support their own and people who you know, kind of a homegrown talent, as well as those from overseas. And then you come back to the UK and there's something missing. There's something not quite right there, in my opinion. So, yeah.
Maybe paleo is still seen over here as a fad diet, because I talk to people about it and a lot of people haven't heard of it, or if they have, they've read a sort of Daily Mail article that portrays it as a fad diet. And I think a lot of the nutrition bodies over here have tried to really discredit the paleo diet, saying that it's a fad and it's dangerous and it's this and that. I mean, I think it always comes bottom of the list when diets are analysed, as to see which is the healthiest and which is the worst diet you could possibly follow. And I think there's a lot of that in the UK, of it being discredited. So people still, they don't really see it in the same way where it's taken off in America and it's a real sort of lifestyle change and a movement and all the rest of it. And over here, it's still seen as like, oh, that's just a fad diet that you'd follow for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. That's a great point. I mean, we're naturally skeptical about, you know, oh, that's the stuff that happens in the US. It's, yeah, as you say, quite faddish. But at the same time, if you look at what's happening with people like Pete Evans in Australia, and some of the big names in the US, and the amount of hate that is kind of thrown their way, either from conventional media, but as well as the other diets and lifestyles that people are supporting. I think in some respects that strengthens the movement there, because those individuals aren't backing down. They're saying, well, hold on a second, we want to tell you why this isn't a fad, why there are people whose lives have changed for the better, and surely this is better than whatever's happening conventionally. Do you know what I mean? We can get into the arguments if you wish about this, but surely this is a better lifestyle than being sedentary and eating processed and artificial foods and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I think there is some of that, a lack of respect, but I think it's still done in the kind of British way of let's agree to disagree. Whereas in the US and Australia, I mean, some of these guys are being flamed. Even if you look at, Tim Noakes in South Africa, again, I mean, he's obviously represents a low-carb, high-fat, ketogenic diet, but he's absolutely being slammed left, right, and center for having that view.
Yeah.
But people seem to be galvanized by that. They're not backing down. Whereas I feel in the UK, people kind of go, you know what? Yeah, maybe you're right. I'll move to the next, the next diet, or the next. I don't appear to be. I don't want to be out there. So I'll just kind of moderate my views somewhat to be a little bit more acceptable. So yeah, it's interesting, and I suppose that's why having this discussion and trying to host things like Health Unplugged is to see where people are on this subject, and to build that community and to galvanize people to say, you know, there are, I don't know, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people in this country who've benefited from this type of lifestyle. Let our voice be heard. You know, it's saving people's lives. My own has been saved by this. People who are close to me have been transformed, as well as those who have been my clients. So there's a lot of good we can do with this, as you both know.
Definitely. So yeah, that brings me on, because I was going to ask about Health Unplugged anyway.
I was just going to say that was a beautiful segue, Daryl. That was really nicely done.
Oh, thank you. I'm not sure what I did then.
But you just brought, you seamlessly brought up Health Unplugged so that we could talk to you about it.
Oh, nice, nice.
For anyone that hasn't actually heard about Health Unplugged, can you just tell people a bit more about it, and also your plans for Health Unplugged this year?
Yeah, so it's the first, or was the first, paleo conference in the UK, actually in Europe. And it was held in central London last year. And it was just, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be attending and speaking and presenting workshops at a lot of conferences around the world. And it's always disheartening to kind of come back to the UK and go, why don't we have this here? You know, people would be really keen if there was, you know, people were coming from the US. I'm sure there'd be huge demand for that. But we have a lot of homegrown talent, very talented individuals who have been living this lifestyle and representing this lifestyle on English soil, on European soil. So it's like, why don't we have set up a forum here, a platform for those individuals to share their wisdom? And that was the kind of the reason for Health Unplugged being born, was to get people discussing the lifestyle, to get to start, you know, building the essence of that community, and recognizing that we do have some of the best individuals in the world right here. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to travel or pay huge fees to fly someone in from the States. You know, we've got people here of phenomenal talent. And probably most importantly, and I'll leave this to the end, is the fact that some of the issues that affect those in the US who drive this movement doesn't affect us in the UK. You know, it's like some of the food issues that occur in the US are just not an issue here. You know, classic example is growth hormone in meat. So, you know, it's banned throughout the EU. We don't have any growth hormone in terms of animal protein here in the UK. But, you know, in the US, lots of those discussions are being fostered around that. And so it becomes part of our vernacular. Whereas actually, no, we don't need to discuss that, because at the moment, everything's good. At the moment, the protection layer of the EU that people knock in many respects has given us some comfort in the fact that the regulation still protects the consumer.
Even things like most of the supermarkets in the UK sell only free-range eggs now. It's much easier to get grass-fed meat here in the UK because we just have, you know, just by the nature of farming. I mean, I know some meat is still grain-fed, but it's just much easier to get grass-fed meat here. And we, yes, like you said, yes, we don't have those concentrated feeding things where thousands of animals are forced into these hideous conditions. We don't have any of that really in the UK.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that intensive farming, the CAFOs, those feedlots, we don't have those here. And I think it's, you know, there's obviously a lot of commonality, and the reason we follow this diet for a lot of us is because of reading a book of an author from the US, or reading a blog from someone from the US. And there is more of a danger associated with following a conventional lifestyle in the US, I would say, than here, because, you know, pretty much you don't have to spend that much money to make sensible food choices here. Do you know what I mean? You can, you know, we don't rely on the car as much. So we're in general less inactive than our cousins in the US. You know, there are just a lot of issues that aren't affecting us in exactly the same way, to the same extremes. And so I think there's lots for us to be proud about, and there's lots for us to want to hold on to, because we're aware of what could happen in the very near future if we just say, oh, it doesn't really matter, you know, you know. I'm really passionate about that, and it's great to start appreciating that I can go to, I was looking at like cosmetics, for example. You know, if I choose to buy a cosmetic, there are 12 chemicals that are allowed to be utilizing cosmetics here, but over 1,200 in the US.
Wow.
Significant difference. And in the US, they have to basically, they don't have to prove that the ingredient is safe. They just have to accept that it isn't harmful, basically. So they can kind of just err on the side of caution, that everything's fine unless someone complains. Whereas in the EU, we have to prove that this is safe before it will be allowed to use in a cosmetic. You know, so there's just so much protectionism, but in some respects, which is a good thing for us as consumers. So amen to that.
So Health Unplugged is going ahead this year.
It is going ahead.
Event.
Pardon, sorry?
Possibly going to be a two-day event this year?
Yes, more than likely it's going to be 2 days. So finalising that probably this week. So it's going to be taking place on the 31st of October, which is a Saturday, and most likely will become a two-day event. So there was a lot of demand for a longer event based on the questionnaire that was submitted last year. So there seems to be appetite for 2 days. And I think it will allow for us to organise, you know, add a little bit more flexibility in terms of some, you know, really hardcore black belt sessions, you know, to add a little bit more variety and scope around topics that people are interested in. So even last year, we tried to move away from it's all about just nutrition, you know, which a lot of these seminars are just tend to focus on food and nutrition. It's like, actually, there's other lifestyle aspects we want to talk about.
Yeah.
And interestingly, they all went down really well. There was no, you know, pretty evenly balanced, even though some sessions are running in parallel. People wanted to hear about grief. You know, they wanted to hear about why legumes may not be as harmful as some of us say they are, as Tommy Wood spoke about last year. So people were really interested in a lot of those topics that may not appear on the standard kind of template for a paleo conference.
I think I was just going to say that both Chloe and I obviously were there last year, and I think it was just great just to see, like you're saying, Daryl, homegrown talent. You know, you've got Owen Raybould talking about, and we've had him on the podcast, talking about foraging, all the way to, you know, Asim Malhotra talking about all the ways that diet and the medical community have messed up our diet, and all the recommendations are wrong. And it was just really nice to see, you know, British people, you know, on the stage, because like you say, there's a huge amount of talent out there.
Yeah, for sure. And even with Owen, I mean, for example, I went out with him. He actually came in and did a Primal Play session later in that weekend with me. And whilst we were in the park, so as you know, I tend to focus on being outdoors when playing out. And, you know, whilst we were doing sessions, he'd be like, oh, let's have a look at this wild whatever it is. You know what I mean? And I'd be like, he's like, yeah, you can use this for this type of salad. And I'm like, really? I'm like, it just looks like a weed. You know, I have no idea. And just that 5-10 minute conversation with him about what was just a mile away from my home was incredible. And it was, I don't know, I think it was fairly uniquely British experience, obviously not foraging, but just being able to have that on the agenda and to have someone so knowledgeable about what's just in your, you know, in your back garden, you know,
yeah,
you know, for food. So, wild food and foraging will definitely be covered this year. And, of course, we're interested to find out what people want to have as discussion points and talking points.
So if anyone listening has suggestions for things they'd like to hear about, are you keen to have people sort of give you some suggestions?
Yes, for sure. So we're seeking, you know, speaker submissions right now, people who would like to volunteer on the day, and just any type of feedback whatsoever. So if you attended last year and want to kind of add some input to what you'd like this year, that would be great. If you haven't been before and you just want to, you know, make sure that there's something on the table that you would like, again, just contact the website, which is healthunplugged.co.uk, and submit your feedback. Add yourself to the mailing list, and you'll be kept up to date with when the early bird tickets will be made available. And we want to make this event better, much better than last year, and hopefully reduce my stress levels. As well, that's the plan anyway.
Brilliant.
Great. So how, just we'll mention it again at the end, but how would people contact you, Daryl, for any of those?
Yeah, if you go to the Health Unplugged website, which is www.healthunplugged.co.uk, and you'll see the forms for speaker submissions, for becoming a volunteer, and there's a generic kind of feedback form, so you can pop whatever you'd like within that feedback form. And over time, over the next few weeks, we'll be kind of formalizing all of those processes in more detail, but at least you can kind of get in there quickly.
Great. So, Daryl, I had a couple of questions, just things that I was really interested to hear your opinion on, that sort of have come to my mind, I guess, recently in the whole kind of sort of paleo and health and fitness sphere. And the first one is that your approach, particularly your nutrition approach, is very traditional paleo, as a la Cordain, so definitely no dairy, no beans, yes. Just meat and vegetables and nuts and seeds, essentially. And I know that that's worked absolute wonders for you and for all of your clients.
Uh-huh.
But what I was wondering is how you feel about how paleo has evolved then, because obviously, there are certain people, talking about how maybe beans are something you can add in, or, high quality dairy is something you can add back in. So how do you personally feel about how that's kind of changed recently?
You said you weren't going to throw me any curveballs. Right. Do you know what? I'm not dogmatic about paleo. I follow pretty much the original prescription. That's true. And clients who come to me, I'll pretty much will start off in that vein. But I do recognize that there are different flavors of paleo, the paleo templates,
yeah.
And there are different levels of tolerance for, whether it's for dairy, whether it's for legumes and so on. So people who come to me tend to be either very, very sick, have some, lots of metabolic derangement, or, significantly overweight or obese. And I find the best method tends to be breaking the back of the problem. So going in strict, going in hard and heavy.
Yeah.
And then as things improve and there's some stability within that individual, then you can start playing around with what works for you as an individual. So I can definitely can debate why I don't believe dairy is a healthful food for the majority of the planet. I feel if you're of Northern European descent, then there's arguably health benefits and less impact of consuming dairy. But the majority of the planet do have issues, whether it's from lactose intolerance or casein intolerance. Some of the milk proteins can cause problems, regardless of the type of cow that the milk is sourced from. But at the same time, it isn't all bad news. And, some people do very well consuming raw milk, having mature cheeses, do you know what I mean? Or having ghee, for example, as a cooking fat. So I wouldn't want to say, it's not my job to tell people, no, that's not on the paleo template, mate. What do you think you're doing? But I do believe there is some, there needs to be some form of purity. If people want to deviate from that, then it's up to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why we have problems in the paleo community, because, if I said to someone I'm a vegan, pretty much everyone knows what that is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you're a vegan. Okay, you don't eat meat, do you? No, I don't eat meat. Or any animal products. Yeah, no. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I understand exactly what that means. And with paleo, you've got to have a half an hour discussion about what that means and what it means to you, and N equals one. And it's like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's personal experimentation. And it's like, I understand the value of that. But if we really want to make a difference to a lot of people, there needs to be less talk about the individual and more talk about, significant populations. That's my take on it. The majority of people on the planet are unhealthy. Yeah. That's the so there has to be a big, quick wins, big ticket items that need to be applied in terms of native prescription to everyone. That's my kind of gut feel.
Yeah.
And then the minutiae around dairy, not dairy, legumes, not legumes, not so important. I think the important areas are no processed foods, no artificial food, not overconsumption of, refined carbs, not drinking liquid forms of sugar, you know, not just sitting down all day and expecting, you know, to have a 10-minute gym session and everything to be fine, you know, saying you don't need any sleep because I can survive on 4 hours a night, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not going to get, you know, any contact, any sunlight on the skin because I'm going to get skin cancer, so I'm going to wear Factor 50 for the rest of my life. And, you know, it's like, that's where what we should be focused on, the entire lifestyle piece. Rather than just the, you know, the strict paleo template or not strict, depending on your what side of the fence you're on.
Yeah, I think there's, yeah. I mean, like, there's just such crucial points that you're making because, you know, when people, and it's absolutely, it is the minutiae of diet, say, but the problem is that when, you know, so you know, if you're allowing in grass-fed dairy, say, which a lot of people are, or you're allowing, you know, some people are allowing some grains back, maybe, you know, if they're a hard-charging athlete, they want to eat some white rice or something.
Mm.
But what works really well about paleo, the, you know, strict traditional paleo for people who are especially sick, is the fact that you've removed a huge burden of carbohydrate from the diet. So if you're obese or have type 2 diabetes, then a huge amount of benefit has just come from doing that. But as soon as those things start to creep back in, then your carbohydrate consumption doesn't decrease, and you're allowing some of those foods back in, say it's white rice or something that could be potentially damaging. And metabolically, a load of white rice covered in grass-fed butter is the same as cheesecake. You know, I mean,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
that's a fantastic point.
Your body handles it the same way, so even if it fits under the paleo guidelines, you know, then you I think you start to see problems. So your point that you know you should maybe start with a stricter version, and then as your body, you know, either heals itself or you find your own way, then you can start to, but not start at the other end and say, well, sweet potatoes and butter are paleo, so that's all I'm going to eat.
That's what, yeah, exactly. And you know, I'll have my 100 grams of dark chocolate at midnight, you know, and I'm wondering why I can't get to sleep. Do you know what I mean? It's So because, but it's paleo, so it's all well and good. But that's a fantastic point that you're making, and I think there just needs to be agreement that pretty much the original template, you know, and the reasons behind it, which again, you know, there are different theories as to what, you know, we know that the foods we eat today were not here in Paleolithic times. Do you know what I mean? We know that we're eating derivatives of all of those foods millennia ago. That's a fact. But the kind of macrobiotic, you know, macronutrient ratio, we kind of know. You know, we know the omega-3, omega-6 ratios. We know that we weren't just consuming, you know, we weren't eating a herbivorous diet. You know, we know we weren't carnivores. We were omnivores. And, yeah. And there's certain things that we can kind of rely on. And in terms of the lean, so, of course, paleo, Long Cordain very much focused on lean meats, which tends to be a criticism if I ever get criticized about it. Oh, you still kind of lean meat type of guy. And I still... There's still something about kind of toxicity in animal fat that concerns me. Not that I'm kind of, you know, I'm averse to eating animal fat, but I'm like, you know, there's, you know, you're driving up and down the M1 and sheep eating grass whilst they're kind of breathing in lots of pollutants. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's not just having grass-fed feed isn't necessarily good enough. You know what I mean? So, that's my kind of little bit of controversy around.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of stuffing ourselves with animal fat and going everything's fine because it doesn't cause heart disease. Well.
And those pollutants end up in the fat. You know, people worry about the liver, but the liver is really good at clearing it out, and where it ends up, generally, if it's going to end up anywhere, is stored in the fat. So, you know, if you are eating M1 raised sheep, then maybe that's
It's, I mean, it's incredible. You kind of, you know, we kind of forget that it's, again, it's kind of, we don't register that what was dumped into that stream 50 years ago. Do you know what I mean? You know, when, you know, dioxin and, you know, all those like really heavy metals are just like poured into landfill sites, which then become part of our, you know, the food chain. I mean, this is reality. So, you know, as I say, I'm not averse to the proportions of fat in my diet. I do love fat, but you know, a bit of moderation, I would say, does also work well, even within the paleo template. Yeah,
and minimizing your exposure to all those, like, you know, people can get super super worried about all the environmental pollutants and toxins and contaminants, but you know, you can't escape them all. So it's just a case of, you know, picking and choosing and minimizing your exposure.
Exactly, that's exactly right. I think it's just it's risk mitigation, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, I'm aware of the risk of smoking. I won't smoke. You know, I'm aware of the risks potentially of having a water bottle with, you know, BPA. So, you know, don't set my bottle in sunlight because it may leach, you know, the plastics into the water and maybe it's carcinogenic. So maybe I'll just have, you know, a non-BPA bottle, or I'll drink out of stainless steel cup, or what, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's, you don't want to become paranoid or neurotic about this lifestyle, but there are just some simple measures where you go, you know, maybe I'm not really sure about the, you know, the harmful effects of plastic, but I can just use glass, can't I? Do you know what I mean?
It's
I don't have to worry. I don't have to research about that. I can just go, oh, I'll just use glass. That works for me, you know. So it's been 11 years now since I adopted paleo full time, because I did have a couple of years of tinkering on the sidelines, and I was seriously sick before then, and I shouldn't have been at that age. I looked okay from the outside. I was seriously skinny fat. I was, you know, pre-diabetic. I was hypertensive. I was anemic. I had seborrheic dermatitis, horrendous skin condition. You know, I'm embarrassing to walk outside sometimes. That's how bad it was. And I used to walk. Not many people know this, but I used to have to wear knee supports on both knees just to walk. Because sometimes I'd walk the, you know, take the stairs or walk onto the pavement, you know, off the curb, and my legs would give way, my knees would basically collapse, and it was horrifying to be in that sort of state, thinking, hold on a second, I should be in my prime right now. What, you know, what's happened to me? I'm just kind of breaking apart, and I have no idea why. No one's giving me any solutions. And when my doctor did suggest some solutions, it was basically, yeah, you need to take this to lower your blood pressure. You need to take something to sort out your cholesterol. You need to sort something out, you know. Oh, you need some iron supplementation for your anemia. And I'm like, whoa, hold on a second. Is this a prescription for the rest of my life? Actually, Daryl, yes, it is, you know. So thank goodness I was able to find out about this lifestyle approach. And, you know, I've been tested on a regular basis, and fortunately everything has been, it's all been good since that point. So I'm reluctant to tinker too much, as you can imagine. and it's now become such a part and parcel of my life that I don't feel, it's not a burden anymore. I don't feel as if I'm restricting myself. And if I did, I probably would go, you know what, maybe I need to try some dairy now, because I feel as if I'm depriving myself of that. But I don't feel as if I am. So, you know what I mean? I'd rather have my sardines for my calcium. I'm good.
Great. So that's probably all we've got time for, Daryl, because I know you've got to run for another podcast. I'll save my other questions for another time. But next
that's
time
a shame. I was pretty nervous though, so I'm not happy about that, mate. We'll take that one offline. Yeah.
but yeah. So why don't you tell people like where they can find you, how they can contact you, and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. So I blog about my lifestyle at thefitnessexplorer.com, and my Twitter and Instagram handles are at fitnessexplorer. And I've got a bunch of YouTube videos, so you can see me kind of exploring different types of movement, whether that's kind of climbing trees and playing around, or pulling people like Tommy around after paying them huge sums of money to do so. But yeah, so you can contact me, or you know, view my videos on YouTube, and I've been really getting into Instagram of late, so. You know, posting videos of literally of the moment workouts and and just what I'm kind of getting up to and the type of food that I'm eating at that given time. So I'm really exploring in terms of traditional food. So my cultural heritage, which is from the Caribbean. So I'm eating a lot of food that I was eating as a kid now, which is fantastic. So I'm posting a lot of those type of photos on my timelines of Instagram as well.
Great. Well, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Daryl, for your time. This has been fantastic.
Thank you very much. Oh, before I forget, I'm almost forgotten. In terms of the new book, Paleo from A to Z, the website is paleofromatoz.com. You can see the book trailer and find that, you know, read some reviews of the book on that website.
Yeah, you've got some super endorsement from, you know, like the likes of Towaz and Jimmy Moore. So, you know, I think that's, you've had a great response so far, it seems.
Yes, no, it's been a really good response. So I'm really, really pleased that it's out there at least. And I know we were discussing it earlier, but you know, it's always great to get your project out there. And now I can start focusing on the next book. Thanks. And whatever else I want to discuss in the future.
Great. Well,
thank you for coming on, Daryl. It was really great to speak to you.
Oh, thank you so much. And look forward to seeing you later in the year, if not before.
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Daryl. And, of course, Chloe. And we'll speak to you next time. Yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Just before we finish, after we finished recording, Daryl had a few more minutes, so he had time to answer one of my other questions, which was about a paper that came out earlier this year in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, which I'm sure people would have seen reported in the media, particularly in the news. It was written by Asim Malhotra, Tim Noakes, and Steve Finney, who are huge, huge guys in sort of the real food and health and particularly the low-carb communities. And what they wrote about was the fact that you can't outrun a bad diet. So they said that even though physical activity or exercise is beneficial for a number of things, it wouldn't aid with weight loss. And that, you know, we should stop telling people to run or exercise to lose weight because it doesn't work. So I asked Daryl what he thought, and this is what he said.
You know, there is evidence that there's limited weight loss, weight reduction benefit for, you know, from exercise alone. And that probably the best way is to have some form of either calorie restriction or you know, eating less carbs, basically.
Yeah.
But I do feel, and whenever I see some of the studies which kind of say that we're not moving any less or exercising any less than say 30 years ago, so it can't be about exercise or becoming more sedentary. I just find that, I just can't stomach that at all. I'm like, you know, everyone knows that we move less now than we used to.
Yeah, you know? And just in terms of our daily everything, like getting to work, at work, like it's just, and
kids.
Yeah, you know, just sit at home and, you know, don't go out and play like you did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the world has changed. And so, I mean, what's really interesting, because I'm writing my next book, or my main book, which is going to be Primal Play. I'm doing a lot of research around movement, and one of my chapters is going to be around about the criticisms around exercise not being as beneficial as people say it is. So I've got lots of counters for all the, yeah, we're moving the same as we've always done. There isn't much difference between, you know, what we do now and what our hunter-gatherer ancestors did, which again, I'm like, really? You know, I'm like this. I mean, just look at, you know, modern day hunter-gatherers, you know, in their traditional habitat or watch them on a hunt. I mean, I don't know if I told you once, I had the privilege of seeing a hunt with a house hand. And, you know, these guys are on their feet for like 12 hours, 15 hours a day.
Yeah.
Just absolutely going at it. You know what I mean? I mean, not always high intensity, just sometimes just pottering around, but it was always physically laborious and intensive, you know, whether it was crawling on the ground or kind of just maintaining silence with contact with the ground. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, of course, carrying the kill, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I think it's interesting, and I think it's unfortunate because a lot of people now are starting to kind of dismiss exercise as being important and say it's just about carbs.
Yeah,
it's just about insulin resistance and nothing else matters. And as you know, my feeling is that I think it all matters. I think every single aspect matters, and if you try and just focus it on one area alone, you're gonna miss something that's important. And I can't wait to see. I just reckon, mate, 2027 is my guess. 2027, Time Magazine, right?
Yeah.
I reckon there's going to be a front page talking about fat, and it's going to say something along the lines of, you know, in 2013, and we all said it's just, you know, eat butter, forget about margarine, and
don't
saturated
eat carbs.
Fat doesn't matter. Yeah, just eat, you know, reduce carbs and everything's fine. There'll be some revelation saying, you know,
This is the thing that, like you say, the scientific evidence says if you do trials of adding exercise, you don't get long-term weight loss. You know, I mean, and that's, if you look at that, fine, you can say that exercise doesn't aid weight loss. But the problem is, even if that's scientifically correct based on that data,
as soon
as you write something like that, people start saying, well, then there's no point in me exercising because I'm not going to lose weight.
Yes.
You know, and all it matters is, you know, that I cut sugar out of my diet and then that's it. But it doesn't matter, like, how much pasta or bread I'm eating or, you know, whether I, you know, don't walk to work or I don't spend any time outside or I don't sleep. And, you know, as soon as you, even though it's scientifically correct, it just takes people's eyes off all those other balls that they should potentially be trying to juggle.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's just fascinating because it kind of makes sense that, you know, I mean, I think movement and, you know, nutrition are equally as important.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I believe that is because we had to move in order to obtain these really nutritious foods, as well as the very dangerous foods, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we didn't move, if we were sedentary, we wouldn't have eaten. Whereas nowadays, we can just literally sit in our armchairs and be force-fed whatever we want at a click of a button. And so there's no driver for movement anymore, but it's a significant driver for eating whatever we want, whatever we enjoy. And it's like, you know, how, I mean, I just don't understand how anyone can say there's, you know, there isn't significant evidence that, you know, even if it's observational evidence, that we're moving far less now, as well as all the other changes in the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
And it plays a part. You know, I don't think it's the only factor. But
it all adds up.
But it all adds up, yeah, it all adds up.